Well, it's time for the Monday edition of the Roundtable. No, I'm not Joe Donahue. I'm not Ray Graff. I'm David Gustina sitting in. And what a panel we have today. WAMC's Alan Shartok, Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, and University at Albany Journalism Professor and Investigative Reporter Rosemary Armeno. What's up?
What's up?
What's up?
Well, we're depending on you.
So what?
Let me see if I get this right.
Yeah.
You're subbing for Ray, who subs for Joe.
Correct.
I get it now.
Yes. I'm the back of the back bench.
What's up is college commencement time.
Yes, indeed. And Alan, of course, delivering the commencement address yesterday at Western New England University.
Very well.
And David delivering an address at UAlbany for comm majors, communication majors.
It's a wonderful, wonderful afternoon. And, of course, this brings us to our first topic. I mean, we see, in light of the issue of this graduation and all these shining faces, families, all so proud of the graduates. But what do we find? Right out of the Cincinnati Inquirer newspaper, loans that gave college students the funds they needed to move forward in life are now holding them back. We talked about this morning, Alan, but this really is hurting young people from being able to move forward, and there's an argument that this hurts the economy overall.
Right. I see it every day in my classrooms in the form of empty seats because students are trying to go to school full time and working as much as they can to cut down these loans. So that's very hard to do. They don't read assignments. They just kind of do written work in the few hours they have when they're not working or attending classes. It's a real problem and it's a real struggle. And still they're graduating with huge debts that have to be paid off right away, and that cannot be forgiven by bankruptcy. You are stuck with those loans.
Yeah, it says for the 65% of graduates who take out loans, the average loan when they graduate is $26,600. Back 20 years ago, that was maybe $9,000. So
right.
That's really ballooned.
Right.
This is a lot of debt for young people trying to get started in an economy that's sluggish. It delays them kind of moving forward and doing all the things, getting married, raising families, buying houses, creating retirement funds and all the other things that people are supposed to do when they're in their late 20s, early 30s.
Alan?
Well, I have a different take. Somebody's going to call me a socialist about this. We sent our children to school with a certain amount of American mythology, part of which is that we have equality of opportunity in this country. And that's what we hear from even the Republicans say that. You know, we're not for giving everybody the same thing. That would be wrong. But we are for equality of opportunity. Well, you can't have equality of opportunity if you can't have education that is given for free to everyone.
Socialists!
So, exactly. Yes. So we send our children to elementary school free, right? If you want to do it, junior high school, high school, and then we send them to college. And that's where the distinction gets made, that the rich can go to these places that are now incredible and talk about social stratification that are now like $50,000, $60,000 a year.
Even though we have a system, by the way, that does not allow very many jobs if you do not have a college education, very many of the decent paying jobs. You have to have a college education now.
As tough as it is, you still do better over your lifetime, significantly better economically if you have a college education.
That's been decreasing, though. That is dropping for the first time ever we're seeing that. I have a son who has a college degree, and he's working in a store that is in trouble, as many retail stores are, and he does not want to go to college for a graduate degree. He does not want to incur more debt to go after a job that probably doesn't exist right now.
Hmm. Well, as your issue, he's got to be very smart.
He is smart.
And there are a certain amount of, I went to Hunter, it was for free. I went to American University, I got a scholarship. I went to NYU and the government paid a lot of money for my PhD during that time. So you have to do it, but that's not enough. It should be that everybody gets the same chance at a start, and that we don't have these universities which immediately say, well, if a college president is listening right now, I know that they're saying, screaming at the radio, but we give a lot of fellowships and we give a lot of scholarships, but not enough so that everybody gets.
Well, not that many people pay retail, so to speak, for college.
Sure.
It's based on performance. It's based on economic need. But it's still pretty tough to put together a package to get a kid into college.
And is that retail price marked up to begin with?
There's the whole thing. As loans have become easy to obtain, schools have gotten higher and higher tuition, so they've done what they had to as they're being cut by other funders, by government funders, and that is to demand higher tuition. So it's a spiral. And the other thing, Alan, is that what you're talking about are full-ride scholarships. I actually made money when I went to college.
Me
I had
too.
A full-ride
Me too.
Scholarship and got extra. Yeah. That doesn't happen anymore. That just does not happen. It's so rare. And even the state universities charge what is a hefty sum for the
Well, that's right. And let me just interrupt you for a second, Rosemary. And then, I mean, you have to see the picture this way. If you raise the tuition, even at a state university, by $500, you can literally look through your lens of your eye into the future and see how many people have to drop out because they can't find that $500?
Right. Yep.
That $500, which is that's just awful.
I have student after student who comes in and says, I want to register for your class, but I can't. I'm on a financial hold. And that means they couldn't pay the bill from last time. They have to pay that off and ante up the money for the next semester before they can come
back.
But
I was going to respond to something you said, and that is that if we insist, if people go to their government, which they don't and say, this is outrageous, we shouldn't
have
this.
You. I agree with you. The government's support of higher education is, I mean, percentage-wise, is really way down. When I was getting out of college,
where did you go to college?
I went to St. Bonaventure, private college, you know, took journalism. And if you won a Regents scholarship, you were awarded a Regents scholarship, you could get up to $1,500.
Correct.
About 12 years ago, my son graduated second in his class and got a Regents scholarship or presidential scholarship or something. And he got
$1,500. Right. They don't go up.
Doesn't it? And here's the thing.
$1,500 was a lot back then.
This should not be a partisan issue. We all have children who are in this boat, and we all live in an economy that is suffering. I thought the report was very clear. If you are paying $600 a month in student loans, which is not atypical, you are not buying a car. You are not looking for a house. You are not having children, which results in all kinds of retail, let me tell you. You are paying off student loans, and that's it, which means the whole economy suffers. So this is like a natural stimulus that we should all be in support of.
Well, and the other thing, as you pointed out earlier, student loans are not covered by bankruptcies.
Correct.
They're exempt from bankruptcy protection. The banks were able to get that through during the Clinton administration, I believe. And the amount of interest, I mean, if you go, I just,
oh my
coming
goodness.
Over here today,
yeah,
I saw, 10%, get a new kitchen for 2%, you know, borrow money for 2%. Well, why can't some of this savings be, passed on to these students and given refi packages the way you can refinance your house?
That's such a good point, you know, that we're not talking about taking money away from the bank. Nobody would lose money with a package that says, let's have reasonable rates and payment terms. That's all we're asking for. It seems...
I'm actually asking for a lot more.
Okay, what are we asking for? More?
No, I want higher education to be free.
I think it's
arguable. You know, your argument is fine. If I'm Andrew Cuomo, I'm listening to this and say, yeah, that's right. That's the way to make this thing happen. More people buying and the rest of it. But I don't think so. I think it's just unfair that a kid born on Lexington Avenue can have a free education through high school but cannot have a college education.
I can't go there. I see too many kids who should not be in college. What I would argue for is a really decent, honorable, respect it, you're not ashamed to go into it, vocational program. Some kids should not be in college. That is not a shame. There's nothing wrong with that.
I think
they should not. I think the Europeans have this right.
Let me take issue with you. It's not that I disagree with it. I just think you've taken a wicked left or right turn there, Rosemary. That's not what we're arguing about. I'm for meritocracy. I'm for if somebody can get in based on their education, the rest of it, fine. But then they ought to get paid for. That's the way that I see it. I don't think we should be saying to a kid who was born in a different place than somebody else with a lot of money.
You are such a bleeding heart liberal. My goodness.
Socialist.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That is, I mean, you give something to someone free and they do not value it. And so look at the results of our high school. Kids, you know, have to go. You know, they don't like it. They don't do well in it. You pay some
money.
But the remedy is an alternative program for vocational education.
I think that's part of it. And I think there's nothing wrong with taking taking out a loan that's reasonable. We had nothing against the student loan program when it was not predatory, which is what it is now.
Rosemary, I went to Hunter College for free. Let me tell you, I have valued it and thanked whatever.
You would have gone to Hunter College and paid some money if you had had to. You're an exception. We are all here probably ornament students.
I don't know. I know, you know, my mother was a school teacher. She's making $100 a week.
My father was a butcher. My mother's a secretary. All of us come from that.
You turned out to be a Republican.
I'm not a Republican. I just think that students have to value their education.
Please. No, I'm sorry.
I like saying that.
It's very easy.
Everybody's got a smile on their face.
It's very easy to borrow money.
We love each other.
Yes, they will lend students lots and lots of money.
Sure. Yeah, you know.
And there's a lot of them are in default.
Well, let me ask you guys something, because I may be bringing up something I can't answer, which is I know that I heard recently that Harvard has gotten involved in this distance learning or trying to come up with a free model of education online.
So has Stanford,
as my mother would say, they're all doing it now.
Yeah. So is there anything there that can, you know, I don't particularly see or conceive of private schools giving up their chance to charge money to go to college.
Those aren't all matriculated courses. You can take courses that are put online at Columbia, and you can take them all around the world, and people take them, and the number of people who stay through it to the end is, you know, a small percentage of who starts out taking it. People take it just for their own, personal growth that doesn't give them a degree that they can walk in and get a job with. So, I mean, there's a greater uber value to kind of making this available to everybody. You don't have any interaction with the professor in these models.
My daughter is teaching one right now online. She's at the College of New Jersey. She's an associate professor. And she is working at it. You see her sitting. She's up for the weekend. All she's doing is marking papers and writing notes to people and getting back to them.
It's actually much more intense than...
And assuming the video streams get stronger and stronger, you can actually see the professor.
Yeah, I would make no mistake about this. This is colleges are going to go this distance route. There's no question about it.
Paradigm shift is going on, and it will be. But there's a difference between distance learning and learning, you know, taking a class that you're in a matriculated program, earning college credit, and you have interaction with the college and you have a relationship with the professor, and just logging in and watching a Harvard lecture and getting something out of it. I mean, I'm talking about two.
They got to be able to work that out.
Well, there are advantages to both online and to class to class, and a good education would be a combination of both. There are other adjustments that teachers and schools are making. Books account to like $1,500 a year, and so a lot of us are not using textbooks in some classes because we have students who won't buy them, can't afford them.
SUNY Albany professor, investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo. We're here with WAMC's Alan Shartok, associate editor of the Times Union Mike Spain, and you're listening to The Roundtable, and we'll be back to discuss something, well, I'm sure you'll will be interested in, and that has to do with aid in dying. We'll take a brief break and we'll be back with more Roundtable next.
Support for WAMC comes from Hudson Valley Foot Associates, podiatric physicians and surgeons treating foot problems with offices in Ulster, Dutchess, Columbia, Orange, and Delaware counties. HVFA.com. Adelphi University Hudson Valley Center, a master's in social work program teaching students to address the emerging needs of society. Adelphi.edu/Hudson Valley. And Brown and Brown Attorneys at Law, 11 Century Hill Drive, Latham, New York, providing professional legal services to help guide individuals and families through the process of buying or selling a home. brownandbrown.biz.
/9:23 back with the Roundtable. I'm David Gustin in for Joe Donahue today, and we're here with WAMC's Alan Shartok, SUNY Albany professor, investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo, and the associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain. From one interesting discussion to the next interesting discussion we go, and in Vermont today, Governor Shumlin set to sign Aid in Dying Law less than a week after the State House gave its final passage. The law will take effect immediately, but several hospitals say it will take them a number of weeks to set up internal procedures procedures for handling terminally ill patients who want to take advantage of the opportunity to have their doctor prescribe them lethal medication. Now, this law is closely following Oregon's law, which allows for several safeguards, including requirements that patients state three times, once in writing, that they wish to die. Others include concurring opinion from a second doctor that a patient has less than 6 months to live, and a finding that the patient is of sound mind. You know, guys, when it comes to our pets, we see that as a mercy. You know, if they're sick, we put them to sleep. Should it be the same for human beings?
I think the oldest of us should go first.
What do you mean by that? Well, I defer to you.
I defer to you.
Over to you.
Here I am about to be 72. And of course, the issue always is we don't want to push grandma from the train.
No.
Because, you know, there will always be some, you know, greedy kid who wants what their parents have. So you do have to have safeguards. And I'm all for them. I think the idea that you could and somebody will figure out a way to get around the safeguards. Let's face it. I mean, you need another doctor. Doctors will have friends who are also doctors and who'll just sort of sign off on it. But I can't tell you how I am for this. I think this is a wonderful thing. And I do know that there are many people who really have had enough. They want to go. Their bodies are racked with pain. And it's time to do this. It's the right thing to do. And so I just think it's a great advance.
You wouldn't expand it, though, beyond the terminally ill, would you?
Would I expand it
beyond folks who have terminal illnesses?
Yeah, I was going to say, this is an easy law. You're talking about the last 6 months of a life, which are brutal. They're agonizing.
Sure.
They're terrible for the person and for the families. This was an easy law. What you're talking about is the one that's a bit harder. You have 2 years to live, but it's going to be filled with treatment and pain. Or you have 3 years to live.
You could go into remission, or you might not.
Yeah, it's unsure. Or you have 3 years to live, but you're of diminished, you know, you have Alzheimer's or some other dementia. Should they be subject to it? Now
sure.
We're getting into that gray area.
You know, the opponents of these kinds of bills argue that these are the first steps of a slippery slope where we're going to identify people who are costly to take care of. They have terminal illnesses, even if they have 2 or 3 years left, and there might be a chance that they go into remission. And that will, you know, that's kind of a draconian futuristic look, but they say this is the first step to that, and they're, I think, necessarily cautious about it. The safeguards, as you say, Alan, are there, but as you also say, you know, people will figure out ways around safeguards, and they already do. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, there are people who do that in the states of outside of Oregon and Montana and Vermont.
I was going to say the rate of suicide, I believe, is rising, particularly among those
middle age.
Scary new change. One can always figure out a way to commit suicide. That's why I think supplying the legitimacy of having doctors around who would say, you know, this is appropriate or not. It's really a good idea.
Well, what about doctors? I mean, is this the Hippocratic Oath or the Hippocratic Oath?
Oh, that's so witty.
I've been avoiding the witty part of this.
This is serious stuff.
But it is serious.
Yeah, you start kidding around about this stuff and you can get in a lot of trouble.
No, but think about it.
The first thing that came to my mind is you got to say three times that you want to die, I want to die, I want to die, I want to die. And I kept thinking of the Wizard of Oz at the end, you know.
No place like home.
I think medical people will tell you that there is nothing nice or noble, or they do not feel good about keeping alive people who you know are at the end, and many times their families
unless they want to be.
If somebody wants to live out their entire life.
This is all about choice.
But what we have right now
is hospice. And there's ways to do it without as much pain, and there's ways to manage pain. Well, I guess the fear is...
You are so smart. You really are. I'm glad you're here.
From the other side of the coin, the fear is that it will become cultural now. Like, Grampy are getting kind of old, and we got all these college loans to pay off for Junior. Maybe you ought to just think about,
Making way for the young.
Right. Very well put.
Yeah, I think this is good
fear.
To go slow like this. One step on the slippery slope is a good idea. Let's see how it works.
You don't want to stand in the way of someone. You don't want to force someone to take medical treatment that's going to prolong their life. And we don't do that in our culture, in our society. But it's there. Well,
we do that all the time.
We force people. We don't give them a choice. You mean if somebody wants to forego surgery?
Yes, sir. It happens all the time.
And the medical industry, who's forcing
their
them to do
this?
Their families do.
The choice on medicine is never just a patient and a doctor.
No.
It's the whole family. And if grandma has said in the past she doesn't want it, but it hasn't written down or they don't really know, they keep her alive. We do this all the time.
At the encouragement of their family, they
go
through these steps.
And all families do not think the same things.
Right.
So ancient rivalries between people and brothers and sisters and the rest of it, this can be worked out on the field of battle by saying, you know what, you're looking quizzical.
I'm thinking Terry Schiavo.
Yeah.
Was a family that was very divided. And look at that poor woman's life was just a misery.
Well, it's those extreme examples that sort of help make the case. But, I mean, just as families would encourage it, there's some families that would, you know, discourage, you know, and whose decision is it but the patient's?
And there's a certain amount of religion that enters into all of this. You know, that there are some organized religions which are very...
Roman Catholicism, it's a mortal sin.
Yes.
To commit suicide.
There you've gone and said it.
And what do you think? Roundtable at WAMC.org. We're here with Mike Spain from the Times Union, Rosemary Armeo from SUNY Albany, and our own Alan Shartok. And we'll be back with more discussion on the Roundtable after this news from NPR. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm David Giustina. In for Joe Donahue today. Around the Roundtable is Mike Spain, Associate Editor of the Times Union, WAMC's Alan Shartok, and Rosemary Armeo, SUNY Albany Professor and Investigative Journalist. And enjoying our discussion today, we turn to a CNN poll which says, with a big question mark, controversies hurting Obama, has GOP overreacted? Reading now. International survey CNN ORC released Sunday morning also indicates that congressional Republicans are not overplaying their hand when it comes to the reaction to the three controversies that have consumed the nation's capital over the past week and a half. The poll finds that a majority of Americans take all three issues seriously, but President Obama comes out of what was arguably the worst week of his presidency with his approval rating holding steady, according to this new poll. Alan, you are our political observer. What do you think?
Well, I do think it shows a couple of things. How are you going to say that it's okay for the IRS, you know, to be picking on people? You can't do it. And we all know it. And then one of the reactions has been to pull in a couple of center-left people who say, no, they came after us, us too. But if that was done for that reason, it was done too late because the business is done. And so when you get the AP thing of looking for, you know, reporters' notes, I think the people could care less, to be honest with you. I don't think that Mike Spain is giving me a dirty look.
No, this poll shows that 53% of people or 55% of people say they're concerned about that.
Yeah, but how salient? And what does the word concerned mean? Well, I mean, do they really want to protect the press, who they despise? And you see that in every poll. Also, I'm sorry, Mike.
It's
an add-on. It's an add-on.
And are they blaming the
AP
president?
The AP were the only problem.
That's right. In each case, I don't think the president is being blamed. I think what's happened in Benghazi, you take a look, and you know, and people say, ah, come on. So we all remember Mitch McConnell. We remember when he said, my only job is to get rid of this president. They think that's what's going on here. So they're smart people. They say, yeah, we don't like this, we don't like this, we don't like that. But we don't blame the president for it. Good.
Does it matter, Alan? I mean, you know, this is his last term.
Well, it does matter. Because we have congressional elections coming up, number one, so that those could be heavily influenced. Number two, as this goes on, the president will have to obviously clear the decks for the next one. And if they can really stick this on him, they'll say, plan those scandal, you know, Democrats played Democrats and all the rest. And I'm sure, by the way, in retrospect, it does look interesting to me. I hope I'm not stepping into something here, that Hillary decided not to take the next 4 years.
Oh, she had decided that years ago.
Yeah, she had.
It had nothing to do with Benghazi.
No, yeah. She had said so. Sure. Yeah. But it does look like she did the right thing from her. From her perspective, it gives her some clearing out time. But he has to leave the door open for her.
Interesting. Others here. Mike?
Well, I'd like to know what you think, Alan. Do you think this is a flash in the pan and these three stories are going to go away fairly quickly, or are they going to kind of stick around?
Well, obviously the Republicans will beat the horse until it neighs. But it won't help if it doesn't get any traction. I think they saw that with Benghazi very early. You know, it didn't do for them what they thought it was going to do.
Even some conservatives are warning that the Republicans or the mm-hmm. Republicans in Congress will make a mistake if they push this too far. Like Bill O'Reilly said last week, this is not Watergate. Stop calling it Watergate. You know, the IRS thing, yes. For example.
But in campaigns, they're trying to rouse the faithful. So I can see the ads being put together, right, Alan, in the next election, and they want to get the Republicans out to vote.
I think the congressional Republicans are so odious that we're all getting sick of them, and it's almost works in the president's favor that they're bringing the charges.
For once, I agree with you.
It's about time.
Wow.
But will it be enough to force them to compromise, or are they going to hold out for the 2014 election, see how they do?
Nature abhors a vacuum. Mm. So what they're going to do is they're going to stick with what they got until they something else that they think. Look, if you're president of the United States, you're going to find plenty of things that are going to be bothersome. An admiral gets caught in a general gets caught in a
scandal.
You should have. When did you know that he was doing this? When did you know that he engaged in, you know, sinful behavior? Come on now. 51% of the American people are divorced.
I also think it's sad that we are skipping right to the elections in 2014 or to the congressional elections and then the presidential election. I mean, there's much of a second term left. How will this affect immigration or a return to some sort of gun control, which are sort of the priorities of this second term?
I think health care is going to be a big thing. You know, how they implement that. If they do it well, if they don't blow it, you know, and make it cumbersome and painful and
expensive
and expensive and create a lot of opportunities for the critics to step forward. And I expect you'll start seeing advertising soon. Sign up. You know, he wants the young, healthy people to sign up. He said that yesterday. The president did in a commencement address, you know, and he wants it to model Massachusetts where that did happen. And that made that program a success. And you know, if that happens, he could pull off another Clinton and end this presidency very popular if he can do that.
But
a few other things.
One more thing. I'm sorry, David. But one more thing, and that is, if the projections by the economists, which is a big story this morning,
that's exactly where I was going, Alan.
Well, I'm sorry, David. I didn't.
No. It's perfect. I mean, but under the radar there.
But obviously, it's going up and up and up. If he ends with more people getting jobs, and then the unemployment rate going down, right? Yeah. Then I think that's what left Clinton in such great shape also.
The economy's stupid. I mean, if you've watched the markets recently and the job numbers that have been coming out, they're way up. So, you know, I think Alan's exactly right. That in the end, the pocketbook issue seems to affect people's opinions mostly.
Well, somebody told me something. I don't know if it's true or not, that Clinton retired as the most popular president in history.
I think you're right.
And that would include Reagan, who was immensely...
Well, he had a terrible second term, too. Iran-Contra came in there.
Well, yes, and how many people really understood Iran-Contra? I think, forget it, Jack.
We were selling arms to the Contras in Nicaragua to pay for covert operations in Iran.
Yeah.
It was terrible. Don't get me wrong.
It doesn't roll off the tip of your tongue.
But it takes a certain amount of sophistication.
You know, we were also talking about whether this was the most scandal-free administration, Obama's. And I'm not sure that that's true. I think every administration that has its, you know, little scandals?
The ones we know.
The ones that we know about. But the voters sort of get by that. It's the big issues that they are always judging. The economy, health care. I think that really is what's going to happen.
Somebody asked me the other day, what about Eisenhower? Eisenhower was scandal-free. I said, oh, really?
Yeah,
do you remember Sherman Adams and his vicuna coat taking...
You threw that at Nixon.
Yeah.
See, we tend to forget those. We forget
they're
those.
Nonsense. I mean, you know, so sure, people are corrupt. Hello.
Let me ask you guys something, because this was coming up on NPR all morning and the criticism of President Obama. Now, you cite Mitch McConnell, and quite rightly so, that the line in the beginning is we're going to do everything we can to defeat the president. And the critics on the other side are saying, well, if the president had more leadership, we'd be able to work through these issues. Well, if you have, forgive me, but the party of no, where is there a chance for leadership to be exerted here? Is there anything the president can do to move this?
You know, it seems to me that what we have is, and we have had since the beginning of the Republic, the people who are the haves competing against those who would like to share a little bit more. And that's
47%.
Yeah, and that's what what's going on here. If you say, I've always felt this, that if you say let's do more for the very bottom, you're done. You're done for. You know, I'm for it, but you're done for. If you say middle class and never say the word poor. You know, I think you have a shot at building a coalition between those who have nothing, those who have something. Because the people who have something are always looking at those above them to say, well, are those people ripping it off from us and taking our children's college education away from them? And they're looking below them and say, oh, come on, you know. Now, this is not Alan's opinion. This is just what the polling picks up. It's a bunch of malingerers who, you know, people are paying for. And that is the classic balance in American politics. And we see it now in the way the Senate's operating, the way that the House of Representatives.
And you mentioned Bill Clinton. And, of course, at the convention this past time, he said, you have two choices. We're either all in this together or you're on your own.
Well, Alan, as a political scientist, which will be more effective, using the president using the bully pulpit and going around the country and trying to rally the public to force their congressional members to support these programs, or is it better to be behind the scenes and negotiate subtly?
Well,
Wait. I'm so sorry.
Mike, that's a great point. Okay, Obama came in. He campaigned on bipartisanship. I'm going to make government work together. The Republicans didn't suddenly metamorphose when he came into office. He had that same picture when he got in here, and he never made it work. He is a terrible worker in Congress. That has been documented. He has never really tried to get their opinion. He does. He goes around and he talks to us, the people, instead of to congressional people who don't like him, but he has to work with. That is a bad job.
Rosemary, you know
that. He's done a bad job.
You know that how? Every time I turn around, he's got the Republican leaders coming up to the White House alone without the other guys. You don't know what he's doing, but I do know one thing. He's the president of the United States the second time, and I think he made it work. I think he did that, and now we have a huge thing coming up. We have the election for the not only the House, which will certainly probably go Republican another time.
Stay Republican.
But, yeah, stay Republican. But the Senate, which could go Republican. And there the question is, what kind of investment of his time, Rosemary, is he going to make going into those districts? If he's got some pollster who's sitting there and saying, this guy's going to lose, stay away from him because it will hurt your prestige, that would be a disgrace. He's really got
to
go.
He has nothing to lose by supporting all the Democrats seeking reelection.
Yeah.
And are we heading into a demographic area where the Republican Party's in trouble?
Well, so far we know that, right? We know that because of Mike, because of the immigration. We know that because of the women. We know that
college loans aren't going to help him with young people.
Well, he keeps talking about that. We used to say at New Paltz when I was teaching all those years there, the only way to get him out of the, out of the dormitories to vote is with a bomb. I mean, it was a bad reference, and I apologize for it. But it was what they used to say. Those kids don't like to vote. So unless you find an issue.
An issue, and
he's been playing on this college loan thing for a long time. I don't think it's working yet.
If we want to get them to work together, is the fix campaign finance reform?
Oof.
I mean, that's a good thing to do, but it's not going to solve a problem in the next 18 months. I agree with Rosemary. He hasn't demonstrated skill or intent, I don't know
Correct.
Which, to
Both.
Negotiate with Congress kind of behind the scenes.
Well, what kind of negotiation would you like, Mike?
Well, I mean, Biden seemed to get some traction in trying to get, not...
He no, you know, don't let him flummox
bill.
You. You're right.
Yes.
Don't let Alan stare.
No. Maybe he needs to turn to Biden, Joe Biden, who has some credibility down up on the Hill, and do some more behind the scenes. And, maybe that is going on.
Where do you think they're going to come on? Where are the Mitch McConnells and those guys? They're going to say, oh, yes, let's negotiate. Let's have, the one thing he was able to do in this election, that after this post-election, is to show the path to immigration.
When you're negotiating. You don't go to Mitch McConnell. You're never going to win him over. Just like Boehner was a problem.
He's their leader, for God's sake.
You know, leaders are at the top. You have this whole the groundswell underneath them.
You go to
the rank and file members, and he has not done that. He calls Boehner and McConnell. He should not be. There are other leaders who try to contend for control from the LBJ
tapes. Right. Oh, wow. He would pick up the phone and he would call congressmen
How would you like to be dead?
You know, but he'd cajole them. He would talk them. He would sweet talk them and pressure them, and he would get these congressmen
dying.
Right. And, you know, I if that's happening, maybe we'll find out with the Obama tapes, you know, 20 years from now, and Carol writes the book about Obama. But the
Lincoln film showed Lincoln doing that.
Yeah. I mean, is that going on? If that's going on, it may not be documented right now. We may not be aware of it. Maybe
exactly.
That's going on.
Exactly.
We haven't any proof that has come out.
But so far, no results.
Then why are you criticizing the man?
Because if he were doing it, we would have proof in the form
of
actual laws.
But you just said we can't know unless...
I didn't say that.
I said that.
Mike
well,
said
then
that.
You said something.
I said,
we,
I think
well,
we can
what
know
do
it.
You say out there? Roundtable at WAMC.org. What a spirited discussion we're having today. Put your hands down. Cut it out. Mike's being.
Boys, girls.
Stop it. Roundtable at WAMC.org is the email address for you to share your thoughts on all of these topics. We're going to take a brief break. We'll be back with Alan and Rosemary and Mike right after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Carrie Haddad Gallery, presenting color theory paintings by Paul Shushman and Urban, featuring works by 7 photographers through this Sunday, carriehaddadgallery.com. And Topricin, creams for pain relief and first aid for children and adults without grease or odor, Topricin.com.
Beginning to think we need a bucket of cold water above us so that I can pull the string when you guys
Rosemary's
get out of
hand.
Yeah, Rosemary.
Yeah, really. I get all the blame.
What?
I get all the blame.
Man, if you could see some of the facial expressions in this room. I'm David Costina with Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain here having our discussion. And what a spirited one it is. We're going to move to an issue. I know you guys have discussed at great length, and it's related to some of the other issues we've been talking about, but over the weekend, the president and chief executive officer of the Associated Press called the government's secret seizure of 2 months of reporters' phone records unconstitutional and said the news cooperative have not ruled out legal action against the Justice Department. He says the chill has already been felt. Rosemary?
Boy, I heard that, and I don't know whether that is just rhetoric or if he has proof of it. I would like to see the chill. I would not be surprised, but I don't know of it. Do you?
Who are you looking at me?
Yeah.
Look at him, because he's the newspaper guy.
Mike Spain.
Has the Times Union been silenced by this horrible development?
No, but, you know, the impact of this might be that good sources may not want to drop the dime on you anymore, or whatever it costs to make a phone call. And certainly most of the reporting that people have come accustomed to, sending emails and calling people on the phone, because you can't just be everywhere all at once. It's going to be hurt by this, and it'll be subtle. And I think that the CNN poll that we talked about a little while ago, showing that at least 53% of the people say they're concerned about this, is a very positive thing. They don't really understand it. I agree, Alan. They don't know what's exactly going on here. I mean, this is national security. Why shouldn't we be going after that? You know, we do give up a lot for national security, but over time, I think that people will come to realize that, you know, even on both sides of the aisle, you know,
Well, Rosemary, you were asking about what he said. The president, Gary Pruitt, says officials that would normally talk to us and people we talk to in the normal course of news gathering are already saying to us that they're a little reluctant.
That's president of AP, not the president of the United
president
States.
Of AP.
Yeah, I mean,
correct.
The president of AP has some, you know, has some stake in this, but you've contended all along, Mike, that this whole thing is aimed at intimidating sources rather than stopping reporters. And that's the
I think it works.
Worry. Yeah. The Washington Post has a story today by reporter Ann Marimo, a very good reporter, looking at how the leaks have been tracked through the State Department. And it goes even beyond phone records. They're looking at reporters' passes in and out of government buildings, you know, where you sign in and sign out. They're tracking that to see where they're going and coming back. It's pretty frightening stuff that you're investigating reporters.
Meantime, you have organized crime. Meantime, you have organized crime and, you know, people ripping off the system. And when you catch one of these guys, that's what you see. They'll send you to jail for the rest of your life because they want to make an example out of you.
They'll probably come down harder on the State Department employee.
Sure, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and the reporter will kind of get...
And isn't the larger scene here that we've seen a dearth of investigative reporting, and we're losing more and more reporters, and so therefore, if your chilling speech in this instance combined with less investigations, it goes to Alan's point always of what is it that we don't know?
Yeah, but there's something else here, and that is that people really don't like the press. We've seen this in...
The press.
Whatever that means.
The media.
Mm. Yeah, the media, as if there is one media, you know, and, you know, they just really feel somehow that they receive protections that they don't deserve. Somebody mentioned before, I know I'm taking this in the wrong direction, but somebody mentioned things the public would like it more if there were campaign finance, and I say, not so fast, Charlie. You know, they're not so sure they want to give money to politicians to run for office so that they can then sort of rip off the system. We make certain assumptions about what people are thinking that, and then we should really think about why this is, why it is that we don't have more appreciation for what you guys at the Times Union do every single day.
Well, I think people do appreciate a free press. It's only when it's not there that they begin to clamor about it. I mean, I think they take it for granted. I mean, they assume that the newspaper has access to things. You know, one of the things we point out is that we're really not asking for anything more than what the public is. You know, we're just members of the public trying to find out what's legitimately there and put it forward and let people make their own decisions.
Here's why I think the press has such a negative image. It's that for us, we easily distinguish between investigative reporting and, oh, you know, the light stuff that we put on the, you know, on the inside of Page Two's
ice cream.
Yeah, ice cream wars. And the public in the polls consistently says they want investigative reporting, even at the local level, which really is very confused on that part. They want Monica Lewinsky type sensational stories, but on the local level. And we don't deliver that because it isn't there. We can't do that. And so they're annoyed at us. And so it does look like we're getting constitutional protections and putting on airs about the government bullying us when mostly we're reporting about Britney Spears and, you know, what's her name, Lindsay Lohan getting out of rehab. They don't like that.
Well, you know, that's you may be right, but I think it's partially that I remember talking a number of years ago now, it is true, to a service organization here in the Albany area and saying, you know, and Cuomo was the governor, and they were mad at Cuomo, Papa Cuomo because he was fighting with the press, which he loved to do. They said, and I said to the group, and they said, why is he doing that? Why is he picking on the press? And I said, okay, how many of you in this room have had one thing to do, one story written about you? You're all powerful people in the past year, and every hand went up. Hmm. And I said, keep your hands up and take them down if the press got it right. And no hands came down. So, you know, there are people who have some legitimate gripes.
Well, there's a perception that, you know, there's so many nuances to everything. There's probably
nuances, exactly.
You know, variance in interpretation in every story that's reported.
Yeah, I mean, part of the journalist's job is to simplify so people can understand, to generalize so that you don't get in every little detail. So we never do get it right. Have you ever had a story written about you that was right in every single detail?
No, absolutely not. Either.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Well,
so
I'm sure.
Are we out of steam?
Not quite yet, but just, you know, very quickly, just to say that someone who is hoping that it's not accurate is Vito Lopez, who is resigning today from the New York State Assembly.
Well, that's the power of the press. You know, he first talked about staying in office, then he talked about publicity. Yeah. The revelations about what his, the
report.
The report, that damning report. And then he was going to step down at the end of the legislative session. Not good enough.
Which is why Shelley Silver, the big thing now is the New York Post, the Daily News, want Shelley Silver out of there. Your paper, the Times Union editor.
We said not so sure. Not so fast.
Yeah. Right.
Let's see.
But I think it gets down to this, that the people who are sitting there are depending on Shelley to do their work for them. Here was Vito Lopez, one of the most influential guys. You wanted to be judge, and if you were in Brooklyn, you were going to Vito Lopez. You wanted to run, you're going to Vito Lopez. They take his power away from him, and he has to resign as chairman of the local of the committee in Brooklyn. And boy, the sharks circle fast, including a lot of people in the legislature who now say, "Well, okay, he has to go." There was something not attractive about the fact that they weren't there earlier. If you're following
right.
me.
He needs to go, and if I were a New York City woman, I would watch out for a government that had Wiener as mayor and Lopez on the council.
That was Rosemary Armeo, investigative journalist, SUNY professor. We've been speaking with her and Mike Spain, associate editor of the Times Union, and of course our own Alan Chartok, who's been joining us. I'm David Gustina. If you want to get to us, you can write to us at roundtable@wamc.org. And while I have a few minutes, Alan, we got a fun drive coming up.
We do, and there's still that lockbox, and we're, I think, over the $100,000 mark.
Just crossing over. WAMC.org.
So this is the week that we really have to make it. If we could, for example, get $20,000 a day, we often get $20,000 in an hour, we could do it. Just go to WAMC.org.
We'll be back.